This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Astronomer extraordinaire Ed Murphy of the University of Virginia joins me live in studio with an update and all the news you need to know about seeing an actual launch of the space shuttle from right here in Central Virginia. But before we talk about all that, I was talking earlier about how I feel like I have the flu. My daughter's been real sick, vomiting and high fever. And I know there's a flu going around, but you were telling me there's something else going around too isn't the flu.
That's right. My two boys were sick the last couple of weeks, and we took them to the doctor to have them tested for the flu, and it came back negative. And the doctor said there's something going around called ILI, influenza-like illness. So it behaves like the flu. You get the high fevers, feel exhausted, and get a few days off from school.
But you don't necessarily get the vomiting and the
my guys didn't
chills
have
and all that.
That's right.
Because that's sort of what I don't feel like I have the full blown flu, but I certainly don't have as severe as my daughter has had.
That's right.
Or the neighbor kids that she caught it from. Uh-huh. They've been real sick, but maybe that's what I got, Ed. Yeah. Maybe I got the ILI.
Well, I'll stay on this side of the desk.
Yes, that's probably wise. So this is huge news here that we would actually be able to see a launch of the space shuttle from Virginia.
That's right. So it's certainly not going to be as spectacular as going down to Florida, where it lights up the whole night sky, and it's really an amazing thing to see. It's one
Have
of
you
those
seen
things.
That? Have
yeah,
you...
I've been close to. Before I came to the University of Virginia, I worked at Johns Hopkins on a NASA satellite project, and happened to be down at Cape Kennedy during a launch, and got to see it from the VIP viewing area, which is only 3 miles away from the shuttle launch. It's a big area where all the astronauts' families and anyone who's related to the mission come in and get to watch it, and it's really an amazing thing to see.
It must be just spectacular.
It's spectacular. Ours was just after sunrise in the morning, and so it actually rose with the sun in the background, and as it was rising up, it appears to be as bright as the sun. And I think the most amazing thing is the first few seconds of the launch are completely silent because you're far enough away that the sound hasn't reached you yet. So you see the solid rocket boosters light, the whole thing lights up, it starts climbing away from the pad in complete silence, just everybody holding their breath, watching. And then when the sound hits you, it's really like someone tapping on your chest. I mean, it's not just hearing the sound, but you're actually feeling it. The vibrations are that strong.
Wow.
So it's a great thing. I think everybody should get down there to see one at some point in their lives.
Yeah. My mom and dad and my brother and my sister, they dropped me off at my grandmother's because I was too young. I was 2 or 3 years old. They went down and saw the moon launch.
Yeah.
And witnessed that.
Which is an even bigger, more powerful rocket.
So, than the space shuttle?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. The Saturn V was much taller, much more powerful. It was a much heavier rocket than the space shuttle is.
Wow.
Yeah. It was. And from people.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And from people who've seen both launch, Larry Frederick in our department was involved in the Apollo missions and went down to see the launches. And he said that it was a very, very impressive thing.
Yeah. We're talking with Ed Murphy, astronomer at the University of Virginia. So Discovery is scheduled. And we want to stress scheduled,
right?
Because they can always cancel. It's scheduled to launch tomorrow night, right?
That's right. At 9:20 p.m., it's headed up to the International Space Station for yet another construction mission on the space station. There's 7 astronauts on board, and they're bringing up with them the last giant solar array. The International Space Station will be powered by 4 giant sets of solar rays. 3 of them are already up there. This is the very last set of solar rays to go up.
This is tomorrow night at 9:20.
That's going
to the International Space Station. How many folks on board?
7.
7 people on board.
That's right.
So how do we get to see this here?
So what's going to happen is the International Space Station does not orbit around the equator of the Earth. It's actually, its orbit is tilted by 57 degrees with respect to the equator because our partners in this, the Russians, have all their launch facilities up at very high latitudes on the Earth. They're up in much higher, further north than ours are. And because of that, the orbit of the space station is tilted so that it's easier for them to get to it. Which means when the space shuttle launches, it doesn't head due east out of the Kennedy Space Center. It actually heads to the northeast and actually travels up the eastern seaboard of the United States. The main engines actually burn out about 400 miles south of New York City is where the main engines will cut off. So as this thing launches and climbs to orbit, it's actually traveling up the eastern seaboard of the U.S. And those of us here in Charlottesville that know exactly what time can look to the southeast, south and southeast, and actually see a bright light slowly traveling across the sky, which will be the main engines on the space shuttle.
Wow. And so where do we go and when? And
so the first thing you have to do is make sure the shuttle launches. And the best way to do that is if you have satellite TV at home, there is a NASA channel. NASA runs this sort of continuous 24-hour channel. And when something interesting is going on, like the shuttle launch, they'll have that live.
When I had DirecTV years ago, I don't have TV anymore, but I can remember watching. I'm one of those space geeks that would just like watch the map to see where the space shuttle was. And I would sit and just watch that.
Exactly.
Say, oh, it's over South America.
That's right. When they're doing spacewalks, I usually you can also bring it up on the computer. NASA.gov will transmit, will broadcast things live. And when they have a spacewalk going on, I usually open the window and keep it in the corner of my screen just to listen to what's going on and see what's going on.
And they do that in real time, right?
They do that in real time. Yeah, when the shuttle is up, they basically do 24 hours, almost 24 hours continuous coverage on what's going on.
Yeah. Now, what if there's an accident or something, though? I mean, is it the kind of thing where only the experts would really see if there was an accident?
Well, we haven't had a major accident, but I did happen to be watching two missions ago when they lost the tool bag on board.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And of course, it wasn't a big deal at the time. I mean, there was no major consternation. You could see the astronaut was fumbling around with the tool bag and that she literally took something out of it and held it there and turned around, and you could just see it floating off in the distance. And I think I said on the show before that she did this amazing thing, which was she held her tongue and she didn't swear. She just went right on with her work. Yeah, so.
That is a professional. Yeah,
exactly. Yes.
I would have been like, oh,
exactly.
See, yeah,
that's right.
Oh, yeah, that would have been something else. So tomorrow night.
That's right.
Check first that it has launched. Yeah. 9:20 p.m.
Exactly. And then what you want to do is you can watch the first few minutes on the television or on your computer if you're watching it at NASA.gov. And about 2 to 3 minutes after launch, when the solid rocket boosters burn out and come off the space shuttle, when they're jettisoned from the space shuttle, you want to head outside and look towards the south-southeast. And you should see eventually, a few minutes after that, a bright star in the southeast, slowly moving from south to north. So it'll be moving here in Charlottesville from right to left, just above the southern horizon.
Now, how does this compare to when we see the space station pass overhead? Is it similar or will it be brighter?
It'll be a little bit dimmer because in this case, unlike the space station, which passes high over our heads, this will be just skimming the horizon. And the really important thing for seeing this is you need an absolutely clear southeastern horizon. If there's any trees or houses,
because it'll be low.
It'll be low. It'll be very low, hugging the horizon down there.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons that it won't be nearly as bright. If you use a pair of binoculars to watch it, you may actually see that it's not just a little point of light, but it's elongated, which is the exhaust coming out of the engines. So there's some really nice videos on the internet that were taken in eastern Virginia on the eastern shore of a previous shuttle launch, where you can actually see the exhaust coming out. It looks like a little triangle-shaped exhaust plume coming out of the back of the shuttle. And then as it continues its climb to orbit, those main engines burn for a total of 8 minutes, and then that's it. They're done for the mission. And so as you're watching this thing, when it gets about due east of us, it should just blink out all of a sudden, and that's when the main engines shut down.
Wow. So how many minutes you think we'll be able to watch it?
Probably only about 4 minutes there. We probably won't see it till about 4 minutes after launch, and then you'll have about 4 minutes in there before the main engines cut off.
Wow.
And, of course, it'll be highest in those last couple minutes, so you may not even see it till the last 2 minutes or so before burnout.
We're talking with Ed Murphy, astronomer at the University of Virginia, about the space shuttle launch tomorrow night, which you will be able to see live in real time right here in central Virginia as it climbs to the International Space Station. How long does it take to get there, Ed?
To orbit?
Yeah.
8 minutes.
8 minutes to orbit.
Yeah.
And then how long before it docks with the space station?
They won't dock for a couple of days. So they'll dock on if they launch tomorrow, they're docking on the 13th, 2 days later. So.
Now, wait a minute. 8 minutes?
8 minutes.
Minutes to get from Florida to orbit around the Earth.
That's
the
acceleration.
That's remarkable.
Yes.
Now, has that sped up in the history of the space shuttle?
No,
or
no.
Or has it always been about 8 minutes?
For the space shuttle, it's always been that. And for most rockets, it's about 8 minutes.
Because it's not actually one of the things that you've taught us here that I never knew and I still find remarkable. Orbit for these things is not actually that high up.
No, that's right.
It's about, 300 miles, you said?
The space station's just a little over 200 miles. So it's even closer. The Hubble Space Telescope, which is higher up, is about 350 miles above the Earth.
Yeah.
But the space station's down much lower than that, only about 200 miles up.
And what did you say that one time about put your finger on a globe?
Yeah, so if you imagine the standard globe that we have in a classroom or that you have at home that's a foot across, so it's and of course the diameter of the globe is 1 foot, which is about 8,000 miles is the size of the Earth. The space shuttle is only 200 miles above the surface of the Earth. It's less than the thickness of your finger above the surface of the Earth. So when you think of a globe, the space shuttle's orbiting less than the thickness of your finger above the surface. And by comparison, the moon is about 30 feet away. It's way on the other side of the room, which is why we can't use the space shuttle to get to the moon and why we're retiring the space shuttle next year. In fact.
Are we going back to the moon? Is there somebody talking about that?
That's the plan. President Bush gave NASA the directive to head back to the moon, to retire the space shuttle in 2010, develop a new launch vehicle, and send astronauts to the moon by 2000. The goal is 2018.
Yeah. Now, your professional opinion as an astronomer, is that money well spent? Should we be going back to that rock?
We should definitely investigate the moon. It's certainly one of the closest, most interesting bodies in the solar system we can study. And unfortunately, after the Apollo missions that ended in 1972, we really haven't done much with the moon. We've had a couple missions here and there, an Air Force mission, for example, that was testing technology. But really, there's a lot more to be done with studying the moon. But that said, I think that robots do it far better, far cheaper than people do.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. We're talking with UVA astronomer Ed Murphy. Speaking of exploration, tell us about the Kepler mission.
Yeah, so last Friday night, there was a major event in astronomy. NASA launched the Kepler mission, which is a mission to search not just for planets around other stars, but this is the first time we're really searching for Earth-like planets around other stars. And Earth-like planets that are in a really interesting distance from the star. That is, they're in what we call the habitable zone, which is the region around a star where liquid water can exist. You're not too close so that it all evaporates. You're not too far so that it's all frozen. It's that magic zone where the Earth is, where liquid water can exist.
So how is this going to work?
It's a fascinating way to do it. The way in the past few years, well, since in 1995, if we were holding this conversation, I would have had to say that we think other stars have planets, but we only know about the 9 planets going around our own sun. We don't know of any other planets going around other sun-like stars out there. And since then, we've now discovered 342 planets going around other stars.
Wow.
And of those, about 35 of those are multiple planet systems, that is, systems that have more than one planet going around the star.
And the way you see that is when you see a star blinking, right? Because something's moving in front of it?
No, it's a star wobbling, actually. So that's what Kepler does. Kepler's looking for the blinking. But in the case of almost all the ones that we've discovered so far, what we're really looking for is, we all think of the sun sitting still with the planets going around the sun, but the sun is actually wobbling in response to the gravity of the planets. If we think about Jupiter, the biggest planet, as Jupiter goes around the sun every 12 years, the sun wobbles back and forth in response to that. And if you're far away looking at our sun, you can actually notice that wobble. And in the way most planets have been discovered, is we actually see the planet shifting towards us and away from us and towards us and away from us using the Doppler effect. This is how we've discovered most of these planets. The problem is that technique is sensitive to finding really big Jupiter-like planets that are in orbits that are really close to their stars, not at all like the Earth.
Yeah. So not likely to have any life.
That's right. They're big gas giant planets, and in many cases they're just they're so close to their stars that they take just a few days to go around the parent star, or a few less than a year to go around, and these things would be much too hot, and they're gas giant planets. So the goal is the ultimate goal is to find Earth-like planets,
And Kepler can do that?
And Kepler can do that because what it's looking for is the planet passing in front of the star, making the star dimmer from anywhere from a few hours up to about 16 hours or so. The light from the star will dim as the planet passes in front of it.
Right, and you see that dimming or blinking on a regular basis.
Every orbit. But
then
remember, like the Earth going around the sun, every orbit is once a year. So you can't just monitor these things for a few weeks or for a few months. You have to monitor them for a few years. And you see the light dim out for a little while as the Earth passes, as the Earth-like planet passes in front of the star. And then if it's in the habitable zone, a year later it will pass in front of the star again and dim it. And a year after that it will pass in front of the star and dim it again. And if you think about the size of the sun and the size of the Earth, the star will dim by about one part in 10,000. So it's about 0.01%.
Because light will still go around it.
Around
as it's
it.
Going
That's right.
out.
Because the Earth is 100 times smaller than the sun. It's 109 times smaller than the sun.
So it's certainly not going to block it out.
Yeah. No, that's right. So its area is 1/10,000th the area of the sun. So as the Earth crosses in front of the sun would get 1/10,000th dimmer. So one part in 10,000.
We're talking with UVA astronomer Ed Murphy. So is Kepler like a telescope?
It's a big telescope. It's got a big mirror inside that's 1.7, roughly about 1.7 meters across. So a meter is about 3 feet. So this mirror is about 5 feet across, and it feeds a camera that people would be interested to know is a 95 megapixel camera. So you think about what you buy at the store, and this is a 95 megapixel camera. It's one of certainly the biggest astronomical camera ever launched into space.
My goodness.
And what's really interesting is because we don't expect this to happen very often, they're looking at 100,000 stars simultaneously, and they will monitor the light from these 100,000 stars for 3.5 years, looking for the dimming as one of these planets pass in front of the star.
And this has never been done to this degree.
No, not to this.
I mean, think of the data precision that's going to pour in from this thing.
Exactly. Yep.
That's going to be remarkable.
But a lot of the processing for this data set is actually being done on board the spacecraft. So they're not bringing the raw images back down to the ground where we would analyze them here. They're actually, because there would be so much data generated from this giant camera,
it'll just say, hey, I found one.
Exactly. What it's going to do is going to monitor the brightnesses of these stars, and it's going to start sending us down the interesting ones and the interesting data so that we can start looking at that. But it won't be sending down all these giant images.
Where in the sky is it looking? Is it a real big swath, or is it?
It's about the size of your hand held out at arm's length, and it's between the constellations of Cygnus the Swan and Lyra the Harp, so which is in our summer sky.
Yeah.
It's a very easy part of the sky to find in the summertime. There's a famous asterism called the Summer Triangle. Three bright stars make a big triangle.
And it's almost overhead, right? The Swan?
That's exactly right. Swan is almost overhead right in the middle of the summer. So.
And why that part of the sky?
It's in the Milky Way galaxy, and it's looking along the spiral arm that we live in. So it was a good chance to find lots of stars all concentrated in one part of the sky.
Good deal. Now, before we let you go, remind us again. Well, say goodbye to Venus, of course.
That's right. So for those of you that have been watching Venus in the western sky, that brilliant star that's been hanging up there the last few months, it's going to disappear within the next few weeks. Its orbit is carrying it between the Earth and the Sun. I mean, this happens every orbit. But it will rapidly sink. Night after night, you will notice it getting closer and closer to the twilight until the end of March, when it will disappear from view as Venus goes between the Earth and the Sun. And then a few weeks later, will reappear in the morning sky.
And it's a sort of a winter evening star, I guess, around here.
Yeah,
right?
This year it is.
And now, remind us again how we can watch the space shuttle launch tomorrow night, assuming A, they launch on time at 9:20, and B, we have good clear skies.
That's right.
To the east.
So if it launches, go outside about 4 minutes after launch and stare to the south-southeast, more south than southeast, with a perfectly clear horizon, and watch for a moderately bright star that's moving from right to left.
There you go. UVA astronomer Ed Murphy, and let's get you in very soon to talk about what's going on with the European Space Agency. They have some big stuff coming up in April, right?
That's right. In April, they have a major launch coming up.
We'll talk about that very soon.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.